So we're very fortunate to have three speakers with us this morning. We'll let them introduce themselves, and they're going to talk a little bit about what they do, how they got into that position. And we're informal group, so just, you know, just kind of go with the flow here. And then if you guys have questions, you can do that as well. So we have one MSU alum with us. Also, we have her friend who is a current student. They're going to hang around. You guys can say hi to her, too. She's currently in the BC program doing an internship at the YMCA.
So, Tanzania, are you from Michigan or elsewhere?
Yes, Detroit, Michigan.
Okay, so we have two Michigan people up here. And
I'm from Chicago.
Nathan, from outside Detroit?
You got it, Huntington Woods.
Okay, and Tanzania's from?
Detroit, Michigan.
From Detroit. Mm-hmm. And Dave's from just above Chicago. And they all do some very interesting things, and we'll let them tell, you know, what they do in D.C. and why they're working for social change for the different organizations and what life's like here. And these guys came in and ran into our kids in the camp, and they've already told them the best hamburger joint within miles. So there's a whole range of information that can be shared here.
We were going to close with that, but... And so are you all undergrads, or?
We're going to be.
Oh, going to be.
They just graduated from high school.
Congratulations.
Wow.
Fantastic.
This is really good of you to be like this.
Wow. So, I think 12 from Michigan City and 3 elsewhere.
Great. I was working on the beach.
You can go whatever order. I wrote it, Dave, Tanz, Zania, and Nathan, but you could do whatever you three want.
All right. I'm Dave Aroka. I'm a legislative associate at the Communications Workers of America. It's basically a junior lobbyist, so to speak. I have a portfolio that I take care of in certain issues. I moved to D.C. almost 2 years ago. After graduating college in 2010, I moved home, worked on a campaign. We lost by like 1%. Then 2 weeks later, I moved out here to take an internship on the Hill with Congressman Lipinski from Chicago. After that, did another internship in the House Democratic Caucus, and then took a temporary gig at the Alliance for American Manufacturing and got this permanent job last September. So I really know what else you got or what I should really talk about all that much. Social change, great. I'm just kind of a political junkie, and one of the things that I really liked about communications workers was how progressive they were in a lot of their issues. They're one of the more progressive unions. And they do a lot of good activism, a lot of good social change work that is more kind of broad-based, broad-focused. It's not just focused around, you know, individual labor fights. It's focused around long-term goals. That's one of the reasons why I like working there. So that's my intro. Thanks. Go ahead.
I'm Nathan, and I as John mentioned, also from Michigan, like many of you, originally, and I went to school in Chicago, and it was actually in Chicago that I got involved with labor activism work. Because growing up in Detroit, like the UAW, the auto workers, were sort of a presence in my life. An uncle of mine was a UAW electrician for many years, and it was sort of something I was aware of, but not something that I thought of as, you know, deeply important for people's everyday lives. So when I got to Chicago, I started talking with workers on campus, dining hall workers, and the clerical workers in different academic departments, and about labor issues and what they thought of their union and these kinds of conversations. And interestingly, the union at UChicago was really terrible. Like everybody that I talked to, you know, hadn't spoken to a union representative in years and had all of these grievances that weren't being addressed. And so my first actual involvement in union activism was trying to reform an existing union rather than trying to bring, do you guys know what a union is? I'm sorry, okay, good. So this is, it's like a organization of workers that tries to bargain with an employer and tries to win better working conditions as well as pursuing progressive political goals on some level, like Dave mentioned. So my first involvement though was you know, seeing the union as this sort of like distanced, disconnected institution and trying to figure out ways to change that. So the summer after my first year, actually, there was a union election at the local, and the union president had just been indicted for using union treasury funds to launder cocaine money. And so he was thrown in jail and not able to run, and so a reform slate was able to come in and take over the local. And so for the next few years, I worked with them during what's called internal organizing, trying to reconnect people to the union, figure out what was important to workers on campus to fight for. I was also involved in a group called United Students Against Sweatshops, which is sort of a national organization of student labor solidarity groups. I think MSU actually has a chapter. You guys can look them up when you get there in the fall. I'm sure they're a good group. One summer during college, I worked for a group of garment workers in Lesotho in southern Africa. We're trying to organize textile workers and factories there. So throughout sort of these experiences, I was getting more and more interested in labor and labor law and, you know, issues related to working people's struggles. And so right after college, I actually worked for a group called the National Labor Relations Board, which is a government agency that basically protects workers' freedom of association rights various ways. So I worked as an investigator for them, investigating unfair labor practice charges that workers would file against employers or their union or whatever. After that, I moved to D.C. to work for a union called AFSCME, which represents state and local workers, public sector employees. You might have heard of them in the big Wisconsin recall fight that happened a few weeks ago. They're sort of a leading force in that recall election. And the work I did for them actually was very different from either the legislative work that Dave does or the organizing work that I had done previously. It was actually shareholder activism work. So unions have these big pension funds, these piles of money that are for their members' retirement in the future, ultimately, and they're invested in a variety of places. And long story short, union-connected pension funds own about 20% of U.S. equities, so like a fifth of U.S. companies are basically owned by workers in some very tenuous way. And so the work I did at AFSCME was kind of trying to figure out ways that we could, as shareholders, use this money to help workers rather than hurt workers, as it often ends up being used. So after AFSCME, I got a job at the AFL-CIO, which is a federation of all these different labor unions. That's what I'm doing now, working as a research analyst for them, looking at companies that we're trying to organize at or writing profiles of industries that we're looking at. Then I spend about half my time sort of seconded to the communications workers with Dave, working on different research tasks for them. So I don't know if this is like a sort of career-focused event, or if...
These are entering college students. They have degrees. At MSU, there's a James Madison College with a focus towards government and free law.
Great.
For about half. But we have people going into business. We have people going into pre-med, so it's a range of people leaving high school, starting college, and we have a week with a focus on social economic change and also labor relations. So we are going to the AFL-CIO. We will have a business lobbyist.
Great.
We spent time in a couple civic engagement opportunities, a soup kitchen, and a variety of things. So it's a whole 10 days program, and this is kind of a couple hours with a focus on people a little closer in age to the group here.
So that's I guess my story of career path so far, but obviously all of it, and to echo what Dave said, I mean, we could both be doing other jobs that might be more lucrative, but I do think that on a regular basis we see real wins and real successes for working people, and obviously there's you know, rampant economic inequality and various social injustices in this country and all over the world. And it is, I don't know, it is really, really rewarding to be able to do work that addresses in some very, very small, very incremental ways those sorts of problems.
Hello, all. My name is Tanzania Thayer, and I was in the
in Michigan State University study program in the fall of 2011, and where I interned at the Washington Literacy Council. And basically, I was a social work intern. I worked with adult students who were basically illiterate. And so I helped them with a variety of things with social work. I did all the intakes for the incoming students. I did all the screenings as well. And then after that, during my transition out of the program, I got an interview for AmeriCorps Public Allies DC, and it's a 10-month program, apprenticeship program, and they focus on the on nonprofit organizations and all the assets of the community. And they place 30 leaders at different nonprofit organizations, and where I work at Fair Chance DC. And their mission is to strengthen the sustainability of nonprofits and their leaders to transform the lives of children, youth, and families. And basically, I am the communications and outreach associate. So basically, I'm like the megaphone for these 65 partner organizations, and I feed their information on our website, on Twitter, Facebook. I handle all the evaluations. I do all the trainings for the partner organizations as well. And what else? Yeah, that's basically what I do. I think it's definitely a very good program. And during the program, I also want to start my own nonprofit organization called Hype Helping Young People Evolve. And so while I'm there, I'm soaking up everybody, you know, skills and knowledge and just networking as well. I work with a capacity builder right now on my nonprofit, and just like the mission statement, program model, what that means, what that looks like. So I think it's very interesting. So I just encourage you all to take advantage of all the opportunities that come your way, because you never know what it can lead to, and that whole network of people that you can have for a last longer time.
How do you land the internship that you really don't have that much resources for? How did you get the internship in Washington, D.C.?
So I just networked a lot through really just anybody I could meet. So I've, you know, working on a campaign, you know, introduces you to a lot of people in politics. And, you know, asking them to reach out to someone they may know in Washington, D.C., in different congressional offices, that helps a lot. And just kind of, honestly, I came here 2 weeks before I moved here. I came for the John Stewart rally. It was awesome. But, like, for, like, the 2 days before that rally, I spent literally just in informational interviews with really random people, like friends of friends of family and all over the place. And, you know, I was really, you know, just kind of right at the end of it. And I was like, oh man, these meetings are really not going all well. And one of my last meetings was with this guy. He's like, hey, you know what, actually, I know this guy is a chief of staff on the Hill in Lipinski's office. Let me give him a call. Puts him on speakerphone, says like, hey Mike, give this guy an internship. And I'm like, ah, I got an internship. 2 weeks later, I was here. So it's really, it's that quick. It's that kind of lucky, in a lot of respects. You know, it's how you kind of go after. It's a lot of effort. It's not just, you know, sitting, building a resume and putting it on monster.com. You really got to go after people and kind of build your own career that way.
So did you have to go through a lot of objection? Like, it turned out for internships? Or?
No. I mean, I certainly did work in for a few, and certainly got turned down on a lot of jobs. But, you know, networking is the key to a lot of things in this town. And so, you know, because there's so many people that have the exact same skills as you, have the exact same resume as you, and it's how you kind of meet people, network, become friends with them, that helps you get ahead.
Yeah, this sounds like sort of crony, awful human resources practices, but like the fact is that, I mean, my experience and most of the people I know in D.C., you don't usually get a job by sending a resume in to a job posting. I mean, certainly people do. All those job postings are real. There are jobs and they're hiring. But like, like Dave mentioned, informational interviews, you know, people are always really excited to talk about the work that they do, because usually they're proud of it, especially if they're working in D.C. Often they feel like they're having some impact on the world, and that's like a heady thing to tell people about. You know, that's why we came out here Sunday afternoons, to talk to you guys right. about how geeks we are about this stuff. And so it's really, and especially if you have some interest in social justice, or like the people you're talking to feel that you want to do good work in the world, they're going to be excited about talking to you and sharing their contacts with you and you know, trying to make you succeed. So really, I don't know, I would say just, like, I can be a pretty shy person, and I would say just, like, you know, put that stuff aside. People will want to talk to you, you know, reach out to them, ask them to give you 15 minutes, a half hour to talk about, you know, what they do and what suggestions they have for you. Obviously, this is a lot easier if you're already in the city, D.C. or otherwise, that you want to be working in, but you can do this stuff over the phone and remotely, too, obviously.
I'll have to agree with them as well. For me, for the program, I did a lot of research, and they sent a lot of internships our way to apply for. But, yeah, I researched people, different places that I really was interested in. I called them, asked them to have internship opportunities, you know, talk to people. I had about, like, 5 or 6 interviews. I definitely got turned down some. You know, I mean, that's going to happen. You know what I mean? But
don't be disgruntled.
Again.
Don't be discouraged.
Yeah. So I basically had like I interviewed for the Washington Literacy Council. You know, I love what they did and how, you know, they you know, social justice, like how they change their lives and like in a powerful way. And then Emily's List was like a political, you know, position. They called me right after for an interview, and you know, I had already took my offer. You know, so just be aware of those as well, you know, because stuff may come up after you decide to take a position that you probably wasn't interested in the beginning, so.
And you can leave, it's not like college, right? Like,
yeah.
You guys just made a huge decision about the next 4 years of your life. I assume that there are probably other schools that you were looking at in addition to MSU, though that was your first choice, ultimately. And, like, you know, that, you're committed for 4 years. You guys can transfer, it's awful, but most people stick with it for 4 years. That your first job is not going to be 4 years, probably. You know, you should, like, always be sort of in the mode of thinking about what you might want to do next or other possible opportunities.
Just on the same topic of networking, I've heard before that, like, a lot of, while living in Washington, D.C., you find, like, a lot of times when you just meet someone, even if it's, like, not a work setting, you just find that, like, a lot of your relationships are kind of based off of the work that you do, and it becomes a lot of just like, what can you do for me? And it kind of ends up just being all about networking. So just from your time living in D.C. and just socializing throughout the city, do you find that a lot, or do you also kind of, are you able to meet people and just have a normal relationship?
You definitely do have a lot of that, I'm not going to lie. You definitely kind of bump into people in the exact same field, especially in the progressive field. You know, you're always running into people that you could just, you know, if you're at a bar and you see someone like right next to you, you're like, you're in a meeting the other day, you know, and it's kind of awkward, so you always have to have your game face on. You can't just have, like, you know, work life and social life. I mean, you could, but, you know, I would not go out to bars in D.C. if you wanted to do that. You guys are in. But it is a little bit of that. You know, there's a lot of always people talking shop, even, you know, socially. I mean, one of the parts of my job as a lobbyist is to really go to these kind of receptions all the time, network, meet people, and just kind of get ins and outs and be like, and so, you know, the next day if I have something in work that I need a question answered from somebody on the Hill, I have, you know, a million little business cards I can run through and be like, hey, met the other day, what do you think about this bill? Is Lieberman going to be, you know, which way? You know, that kind of thing. And that, it helps, but you're right in a lot of respects that sometimes it's a little like,
yeah, after a few months in D.C., I started drawing. When I was a kid, like middle school kind of thing, I would sketch a lot, and I just totally stopped for like 10 years, and then started up again, in part because I wanted sort of something to do that was totally not work-related. But also then when people would ask me, like, what I'm doing in D.C., I could say, oh, I draw, you know. And it was totally cool compared to saying, oh, I do this dumb union job, and I'm just like you, and moved here for this job. So, yeah, I mean, it's just something you have to get used to and put limits on.
Always have something else to do. Like, I still play baseball. I played baseball in college, and I still play out in this men's league in Virginia, and so... You know, I can always just kind of shift the conversation to baseball. You know, I could probably talk to Tigers with any of you guys if you wanted to. So, you know, that's definitely helpful. Don't just be kind of like a shop guy. Politics, obviously, everyone wants to talk about it this time. So, if you talk about something else, it's usually your best.
The
Connecticut
through
Sports
Network is everyday life
for
lobbyists. What do you usually do on
a normal day-to-day
basis?
Yeah,
he works right next to me. He doesn't even know. So I get in around 9. My coffee. So it really kind of varies from day to day whether Congress is in session or not. I have to keep track of a lot of bills that are going through the House and the Senate. So, for example, well, first let me tell you about a little bit. I realized earlier that I didn't tell you who the communications workers are. With a major telecom union, we have workers at Verizon, AT&T, a lot of the cable companies. But we're more than that. That was our core working group workers for a long time. And we started expanding, becoming more of an umbrella union. We merged with the Association of Flight Attendants, AFA. So we represent a lot of flight attendants, about 50,000 or so. We have really a lot of people that you don't really want to think or you don't associate with communications necessarily. Nurses, firefighters, prison guards. You know, really, my favorite, UPTE, the University Professional and Technical Employees, which are the researchers and engineers at the nation's two nuclear labs, which was really cool, and I got to lobby on some nuclear technology once, which was really neat. Nothing I ever thought I would learn about, but I'll tell you guys the whole story. It's really kind of interesting. Anyway, back to your question. I you know, keep track of bills, major pieces of legislation that will affect our members. We also kind of whip certain letters. We'll get you know, a bunch of members of Congress to sign on to a letter to what's, for example, right now we're trying to get about 100 plus Democrats to sign into a letter to the American Airlines CEO Tom Horton, telling him to stop these delay tactics that he's using to block the union representation election of 10,000 passenger service agents in American Airlines. They've been kind of delaying and using kind of some legal BS to prevent the election from moving forward, even though it was ordered by the National Mediation Board about 6 months ago. And, you know, it's a really, really complicated and long story. But anyway, what I'll do is I'll call through their staff members and try and get them to sign on to the letter, try to get them to ask their boss to sign on to the letter. If they have any questions or concerns, they can talk to me about them. So that's one thing I do. The portfolio part is you know, different pieces of legislation. I work for on this one of my major things that I work on is the financial speculations tax, which is a 0.03% tax on all Wall Street trades, basically excluding currency, the currency exchanges. And so I'll go up to the Hill with a coalition of economists, you know, good government groups, consumer watchdog groups, and we'll meet with members of Congress and their staff and asking them to, you know, sign on to a bill or support the idea of the tax. And so that's kind of one of the major things I do. So that's kind of, I don't know if that helped answer your question. I don't know if it kind of answered in a roundabout fashion either.
Well, I guess essentially my question is, how do you get them to sign on to it? Like, what do you have to
convince them of the benefit?
Sorry?
Convince them of the benefit of the bill in itself. So for the financial speculations tax, It have a couple of great attributes to it. It would raise about $350 billion over 10 years. And right now we have a huge, huge budget deficit that really needs kind of filling, and that's a big chunk of change. It also have really good market effects. We kind of put a stamp down on high-frequency trading, which has caused a lot of hyper-liquidity in the market, and really kind of screwed over a lot of normal day traders, normal, even our union members, their pensions are on these things that are traded very slowly and can't really keep up with high-frequency trading. So, you know, basically those two arguments, trying to get them to understand where we're coming from in that respect, and trying to convince them of both the economic benefit and the budget part. So,
and that their constituents care about this. I mean, that's one thing I've seen with unions. There's some talk about like union money, and I'm sure Dave hands out briefcases full of cash. But I just haven't seen that. What I've seen is more really making the case like, look, we represent 700,000 people, we represent 10,000 voters in your district, and they really care about their jobs being protected. They care about their health care being, the cost not getting out of control. Those sorts of arguments, I do think that, politicians need to hear that stuff, and often they only hear from people who are representing big companies or other interests that have the resources to, hire lobbyists to go talk to them. And so I think one thing that union lobbyists do is really remind them of the things that the people who voted for them care about and try to keep that.
He does a better job explaining my job.
What did you each major in, and what sort of things did you get involved in college to help you prepare for a career in politics?
I majored in political science, minored in history. I did a lot of political internships. I was still playing baseball over the summer. I needed to do that to play baseball in college. So I couldn't do a DC internship while I was in school. I would really, really recommend you guys do that, though, if you can. But I did things at home in Chicago. I worked for the 10th Congressional District Democrats, which was a nonprofit that worked to elect Democrats at all levels.
I majored in philosophy, actually, which is not political science, but it's certainly like it's a major that helps you think clearly and write well. I mean, writing, I think at least for both of our jobs, and sounds like it was as well with social media stuff. I mean, writing is like the bread and butter of this kind of work, writing letters or writing reports or whatever, and definitely, I know like the first year of MSU, there's probably some sort of like writing colloquium or, some writing experience, and a lot of that's probably going to feel formalistic and obnoxious at the time, but like, work on that stuff, put time into it, that's going to be more helpful than any like business class you take during college for preparing yourself for a career.
A lot of work in politics is somewhat PR based, public relations based, and PR work is really writing in a very concise manner. So I really think that you guys should focus on learning how to write in a concise way. That's something that I had to learn really quickly when I moved here. I was a poli-sci major, and it seemed like at my school they taught me to be long-winded in my essays. And, it helped to have like these 30-page papers and I could just go on a rant for like 3 minutes. But you get here and everything is like no more than a page. You have to have everything right there. Because politicians and staff, they don't have time to read your 20-page report. They have time to read literally bullet points or a page of very, very, detailed, succinct information. So, right, that's my...
I was in a political major. Interdisciplinary studies and social science was my major in that field. I got involved in a lot of campus organizations. IDS was an organization, interdisciplinary studies student organization. At first, it wasn't really like there wasn't really many people in that specific organization, and so me and like four other people got together, like, we need this, because the College of Business has a program and like all these other places, but not in the College of Social Science. And so we got together to do all the stuff, to have a kickoff meeting, to, you know, get involved with different organizations to collaborate. So I would definitely say campus organizations get involved.
I mean, you know, that experience Tanzania had of rebuilding or building an organization, holding meetings. I mean, a lot of, I've never hired anyone, so I don't actually know whether this is true or not, but it seems as though what employers are more interested in is less like exactly who you work for and more what sort of work you actually did while working for them, whether it's a student club or an internship or the part-time job you have during college to help pay for it. Like, the question is, you know, whether you step up, take a leadership role, you know, learn skills that are applicable to future stuff. So I don't know. I would say, like, do whatever you can do, whatever you have access to that you're most interested and excited about, and that'll probably be the area where you can excel the most, and then, like, put that on your resume in a way that seems impressive and like you've accomplished something there, rather than just, you know, I worked for Goldman Sachs, but, like, you know, I brought my superior coffee every day and, like, looked at spreadsheets for 12 hours, you know, like that sort of stuff. It still says Goldman Sachs, but it doesn't really, you know, demonstrate anything about your character or how you'll be in a different job. So
if I can echo on that too, we have career services at Michigan State University, so they do a lot of resume writing workshops, and they'll say the exact same thing. You need to have the substance listed there, and when you go through your resume, you can talk about what the position was. You know, that's the first thing in bold, and then have the organization second, because exactly what you said, it depends on what did you do, instead of just, yeah, that's great, we were at Goldman Sachs, but what value all this thing did you take out of it?
And even if you brought, you know, just brought coffee every day, you know, reword that to say managerial support.
Logistical, supply chain.
Yeah. There's a lot of ways to not say grab coffee.
You ever have to bring coffee?
Yeah, career services will tell you exactly.
But I mean, also,
like, you guys are just going into college, like, this should be on your radar, but there's more important things to do in college than get a good internship or be worried about 4 years afterwards. I mean,
I am, like, unbelievably time to learn and impressed with all of you guys.
Yeah, this is not. So, like,
really, really impressive.
You slack off in the career stuff for the next 2 years now, you're just so far.
No.
Sorry, Jeff.
A couple people in the group have worked in elections, worked for campaigns or stuff, but a couple of you have. I don't know if you want to say sort of how you got, for those that haven't, how you got involved in working on a political campaign.
I called and asked if they needed volunteer help, and they did. I volunteered for a while, and then they kind of bring me on and proved that I was a very capable young man. They kind of keep me around for a while, and then, you know, if you're there long enough, you can probably put it on a resume. So,
did you just get coffee, or did you do doors, or what else?
Oh, no, you start, you know, phone banking is really where you start, or door-to-door canvassing. You know, you start really kind of at the grassroots level. And you really do learn a lot about politics at that level as well. There's an old saying that all politics is local. It all comes down to individual level. So working at the grassroots level is a very good way to start.
Dave, a question about your job. To become a lobbyist, do you have to be involved in an organization, or is there like a firm that hires lobbyists or, you know, specializes in it?
No, I just kind of have to be involved in the organization. I got the job through, so I was at the Alliance for American Manufacturing, and one of the board members also did work for CWA as a trade specialist, analyst guy, and he kind of recommended me here that, you know, they were looking for LA. Kind of put two and two together.
Are there also, like, lobbying firms that are independent? I think a lot, I mean, senior lobbyists, I get the impression that most of them have worked on the Hill or done some other work before becoming lobbyists that gives them some valuable network that they're bringing to a lobbying firm. But I'm sure that there's, like, internships and lower-level positions at lobbying firms as well.
And just like for the political campaign, one of my friends, she went to an event. She met this lady from Emily's List who focused on women and all the, and the politics and things of that nature. And so she met with the lady, you know, after that, she got her internship at Emily's List. She did an unpaid internship. She didn't have no money. She stayed out in D.C. After that, they asked her to come to the event. She went to an event. She met this guy who went to Michigan State. You know, they had a conversation and stuff that she wanted to do or whatever. So actually, don't have to ask her different questions. She took his car. He emailed her about a political campaign in Connecticut. She applied for it. They called her. She interviewed for it, and they called her for it. And now she's in Connecticut on a political campaign for 5 months. So it can happen as easily as that, just as networking with people out here.
Can you talk a little bit about the nonprofit that you guys represent, and maybe
what's
your favorite and what they do?
Okay, so Third Chance, basically, like I said, is a nonprofit organization who helps other nonprofit organizations, and they have a year-long partnership, and they work in different areas such as strategic planning, human resources, board development, and different areas like that, and it's for a year-long partnership, and they work with a capacity builder, and then after that, they are eligible for a second-year partnership as well, and they have a graduation in the process of it. And basically, what that means is that Third Chance, they does the indirect stuff. It's not direct service. It's the back end of nonprofit to keep it sustainable, to keep it going, to keep the funding coming, all the infrastructures of the organization as well. And
We
work with different types of organizations: Chess Challenge, Brain Food, Access Youth Inc. Just like 65 different types of organizations that focuses on the same population and the same people. And I have had about 12 informational interviews with 12 EDs, and I work directly with the executive directors of these organizations. So that's just the whole network for myself to keep, you know, after this program that I can have as well. I like a variety of organizations, and I volunteer as well while I'm in AmeriCorps. I created a video for Mentoring Today to get into this competition for a car from Toyota to help their incarcerated youth get back and forth to different places. I helped an organization with their social media strategy. They wanted to launch a Facebook page, a Twitter page as well, in their first e-newsletter. What else? I'm doing a lot of stuff. Young Ladies of Tomorrow work with at-risk youth girls. I did a facilitation there as well. They had a 6-week youth employment program. So just taking advantage. I do a lot of stuff, and it's very exciting to be able to be involved in these different organizations. And I brought packets for you all about Third Chance. You just like the organizations, because you may be interested. You may want to do an internship when you come back into D.C., and if you want to, you know, get in contact with somebody from the organization, I can get you in contact with them. So I'll definitely pass that out before you all leave.
Can you all maybe speak a little bit more about just kind of the career paths of people that you've met in Washington, D.C., or people that you work with in Washington, D.C., because it sounds like a lot of you have done a lot so far, whereas maybe like our parents' generation will have, maybe if you're in business, you stay loyal to a company for decades, and it sounds maybe like a lot of people, at least just in the D.C. area, end up doing a couple years maybe as a staff member for an elected official, and then you go or you work for a nonprofit or go lobby or do different things, but doesn't sound like anyone stays for a long time in one place. That's not true.
You're right, that's very unique to D.C., I think, in a lot of respects. Yeah, there's a lot of job turnover in this town just because of the nature of politics. You know, there's every 2 years there's an election, there's 4 years that, you know, things kind of change over a lot. So the things kind of move around and shift. You know, every election is kind of a big deal in this town. And, you know, it drives a lot of job openings and job opportunities. And a lot of people also lose their job. So I think to answer your question, the career paths of people really kind of vary. You know, there's a lot of people who work specifically, they came to D.C. to work for their politician. You know, they worked on a campaign and their candidate won, and their candidate said, well, you can come to D.C. and, you know, be our legislative assistant. Something along those lines. They continued doing that for a long time. And then after, if they lose an election, here they have, you know, a nice big thing on their resume to say, you know, I have all of these skill sets. I've been doing this already for a while. And say the next guy that got elected, they can try and get a job with them. But things do bounce around a lot like that. It's a very young town because of that. You know, things, it's very fast-paced. A lot of people here are very, very young. I think I was actually looking at the stats the other day. It's like the youngest city in the nation. It's like around the frame. And I think, you know, the nature of the work here drives that in a lot of respects.
Interesting. To think of some specific, like, my supervisor that asked me, she got a business degree and then worked for Bear Stearns for a while. As an analyst, and then went to Brazil to do like micro lending stuff, and then came back and like worked for several unions and sort of worked her way up into a director type position. My current supervisor got a PhD in political science and taught for 15 years before deciding that you know, academia wasn't, you know, having the impact on the world that he wanted to be having, and then he started working as a researcher for a couple different unions and sort of worked his way up. At AFL, Glenn Prusik. I think political side, I would echo what Dave said, which is that there's sort of two groups of people, at least that I've seen. One group that came up through whatever political campaign, whether it's in the administration or on the Hill or whatever, and they're obviously like, it's important that you're capable and good at your job, but also like loyalty is really valued, and you know, you like have your guy or your woman or whatever who you're attached to and who got you to that position, and like, you know, that's sort of your bread and butter, that relationship. And then there's other people who are just like interested in politics and got an internship and worked in sort of some outside.
My guy lost.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you?
I think it varies. Especially in D.C., I don't think like it's one straight path that you can go here. A lot of people, I used to think that, you know, their major, like, your major is what you'll, you know, that's what the career you'll have. But many people, the job that they have is not their major that they got from their college. You know, it's very different, you know. And I was like, what? You know, so that definitely says a lot to me. So, yeah.
Is there anything that sparked your interest until pursuing a career in politics, or have you guys always been interested in politics?
I always have been a very political family. I was raised. You know, my dad worked on the Dukakis campaign. I don't know if that's a good thing to mention, but you know, my family's been always very political. My first kind of delving into politics was a seventh grader, door to door handing out stickers. Nathan.
Something good before and after picture here for you. I don't consider the work I do to be politics per se, but I certainly, you know, I can think of certain experiences that really sparked my interest in labor and organizing as a way to, you know, see concrete improvements in people's lives, like a dining hall workers contract that I worked on. That, you know, this unit, they had been organized but totally neglected by the union for many years, and did this big campaign with protests and a bunch of stuff, and we got the biggest wage increase that people had ever seen, a new healthcare plan for single mothers that they could actually afford, and this change in how hours were distributed that, you know, had a real tangible impact on a day-to-day level of you know, what these people thought of their jobs, how their lives were, whatever. So, you know, seeing things like that, and I think that's exactly the kind of thing that you lose sight of the longer you're in DC, unless you're doing direct service kind of nonprofit stuff. So I think, I mean, definitely, be on the lookout for like experiences that really ground you and orient you and keep you anchored about what you really care about.
As far as politics, I would think like the issues that are happening that are being affected by these different changes that's going on is really what interests me. Like for the nonprofit, their budgets, you know, they don't, you know, it's not a guarantee that they'll get this certain amount, you know, that year to support this program, and, you know, and they'll have to find funding from somewhere else. So I think like issues like that, I did a public policy research for the Michigan State, you know, Study Away program, and my question was for my research is like, why is the unemployment rate so high in the nation's capital? So I did a whole research on that and just like the different programs that's going on that's getting affected, things that's been implemented, you know, in different states and how that has affected them in a positive way and how DC is trying to replicate what they did, you know, to see that change happen in DC. So, yeah.
I guess my question is more for you, Dave. So you're working as a lobbyist. You were kind of talking about how you have to know various legislation from all different policy areas. You feel that you have to like take time out of your social life, I guess, to like sit down and read some information about what you said that you were kind of just to, like, act like you know what you're talking about.
That's exactly it. I have to act like I know what I'm talking about. It's not feasible for me to be a PhD expert in every single thing that I lobby on. I have to research basically up to the point where I can go to try and convince a member of Congress or their staff of the benefit of a piece of legislation or an issue. So I do spend a lot of time trying to research a topic, learn all of the things, and so here's one of the ways that I kind of research. I look at an issue or a bill, and I say, what is a member of Congress or a staff member going to ask me about this? And this should actually kind of apply to a lot of things, especially interviews. It's kind of like being interviewed every day. And I kind of go through and I make a list of questions that I think they're going to ask me, and I kind of write out answers, and I kind of take that with me when I'm going up there. I have my little folder, and I'll book that out. And you know, if they ask me a question, you know, I kind of hopefully have it already there. You know, just make my own little FAQ sheet, myths and facts about certain things. That helps. But you're right; it's very difficult to be an expert in a lot of things. I am a very, very ADD person, so this job is actually kind of plays right into that, because I can do so many different things every day. That's one of the reasons why I love my job. You know, I can spend an hour talking about trade, and then the next hour talking about, you know, healthcare, the next hour talking about taxes. So it's kind of in that respect. And the next hour talking about nuclear missile technology.
Have you ever had to lobby with something that I guess you personally disagree with, and does that create...
Not going to answer that.
Okay. All right.
No, sure. there was one, you know, right. It was right when I came in. It was F-136. Joint Strike Fighter.
Right. Yeah.
We represent a lot of workers at the GE plant in Ohio that builds the engine for the F-136 Joint Strike Fighter. And me personally, like my personal beliefs is that we shouldn't be spending any more money on defense planes right now. These unbelievably high-tech planes are, you know, just it's a bottomless pit. It's like buying a boat instead of that times a billion. You're sinking so much money into this thing, and it's delayed into billions and billions and billions of dollars. Nevertheless, these are our workers that are building this plane engine, so I had to, you know, go in there and defend funding for something I personally think is kind of a waste of money.
Yeah,
But the fact is, like,
off the record,
you know, these are democratic organizations that are responsible to the membership. So, you know, our boss's boss was elected by, you know, people, some of whom who worked in this GE F-170 plant. And so, you know, the fact is that it shouldn't be about Dave's individual personal beliefs about this issue.
It's not my job. It's not my job to make that decision. And it shouldn't be, you know, 24. It's a job of a guy who was elected by 7,000 members.
So, Dave, what about other lobbyists who lobby for interests that perhaps conflict with the public's interests?
Oh, God, I don't know how they sleep at night. It's one of the reasons I love my job, is I can, everything except pretty much that issue that I just mentioned, I have been completely 100% aligned to. It's for social good, it's for the benefit of the middle class, which is being annihilated these days. And so, you know, I really do like my job and respect. How a Goldman Sachs lobbyist sleeps at night, I don't know.
Is it more lucrative?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. it's totally cynical, right? Like any, when you're in any job, it's far easier to be successful if you start to believe in it a little bit, right? Like if you're a Goldman Sachs lobbyist, you probably believe that government regulation of the financial sector is cramping creativity, is increasing prices for retail mortgage buyers or whatever, and you're there, you as a lobbyist are there fighting tyranny and making sure that the government gets its hands out of your business, and like, you know, you can see how you can sort of build up an account for whatever
to
you're doing.
Enough times.
Yeah, I mean, it's my view that most people on the Hill are not strictly cynical. Wow, this is awful stuff I'm doing, but $200,000 a year, man, I'm in. I think it's a little more complicated than that.
Anyone else got some more questions?
Shouldn't end on that. You guys. Come on, somebody has a softballer.
So are you in Nats then?
Yeah.
We're on the game on Tuesday.
You're on the game?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
We get a little tour with my community relations, vice president of community relations, and then watch the game.
Oh,
talk
nice.
Talk about how athletes make millions of dollars.
We don't.
Session workers don't make millions of dollars. How that happens. Differences.
We ask them to talk about what it's like, what they're like as an employer. In terms of their collective bargaining, their HR, but then also how they relate to the community and how do they reach out to a community that doesn't have money, some of them can't afford to go to their games. So that's what we aim. We'll see what they do, but we have to do that in a little tour and then also watch some of the game with this team that's astoundingly doing much better than anybody had expected for a while.
Really good this year.
Meanwhile, the Tigers are supposed to be at the very top, and we're battling a little bit behind Chicago and Cleveland. So, yeah, that's what you like. So, you're White Sox fan instead of Cubs?
Yeah.
Even though you live closer to the Cubs?
Sox. When I moved there in the 1990s, the decision of whether to be a Cubs or White Sox fan, I watched the Cubs. It's just not baseball, you know. They do something else up there.
You grew up on the Phillies?
Yeah, I grew up in Philadelphia for the first half of my life, and so I was a Phillies fan.
So we're doing great this year.
Yeah, fantastic.
We just have a little thank you gift.
Oh.
Thank you guys for coming. We appreciate you coming on a Sunday afternoon.